me out here. As you can tell from the long-winded title, I'm going to be trying to pick apart a number of different aspects of behavioral variation, with the idea that doing so can really help us understand what the causes of variation are. Now, broadly speaking, this falls under the umbrella of animal personality. And as it's been found in a wide range of species, there are often consistent individual differences in behavior that persist over time and across environments. And the species that I'll be focusing in on, as was mentioned, is up on the right, these cute little guys, Belding's ground squirrels, which will be the focus of most of the talk. But then I'll also be presenting a little bit of data on harvester ants down in the lower left there. Very different species, kind of spanning the range of species that exhibit personality. But I'll be focusing in on a couple broad questions, as I raised at the beginning. How should we quantify behavioral variation? In a lot of senses, this is very basic, but I think it's still an active question in the field, that there are many different ways that behavior can vary, and it's still an open question as to how best characterize that behavioral variation. And of course, then also trying to evaluate some of the causes of that variation. And so I'll do this in a few different parts. First, evaluating multidimensional plasticity and personality. Now, when I say multidimensional plasticity, I'm referring to not just how an individual might respond to a particular environmental variable, but rather how they respond to combinations of environmental variables like they might experience in nature. And I'll be moving on to talk a little bit about behavioral syndromes and condition, assessing a few models explaining how condition might account for correlations among behaviors. Then talking about intra-individual variability and how unmeasured environmental factors might be contributing to that type of variation. And when I say intra-individual variability, I'm talking about how widely an individual might fluctuate around its behavioral mean. And then wrapping up with a little talk on temporal predictability and how stress physiology might affect those patterns of behavior. So, all right, to start off with multidimensional plasticity and personality. Be studying these cute little guys, Belding's ground squirrels. Just a little background. They live 2 to 3 years on average, but up to 10 years. They're social species and one of the longest hibernators of any North American mammal. Another important aspect is that they're seasonal breeders. And I think this photo of our field site up in Rock Creek really exemplifies that seasonality pretty well. So if you look at the picture on the left, the squirrels are not hibernating at that time. This is the active season. The males are up above ground, chasing females all over the place. The mating season lasts for about 2 to 3 weeks, and males will be active during that time. Females actually just have a single day of estrus in this species. We call it their special day. And so that environment is obviously very different from the same place later in the season where it's really lush and there's a lot of fresh grass and growth to forage on. And so it gives the expectation that we might see a fair amount of plasticity in a given behavior such as boldness. That if we look at these different environmental variables that may vary seasonally or may vary in other ways, the optimal behavior is likely to be different depending on that environmental context. And so you might expect that an individual represented by this line here, reaction norm, might have a slope where it will change its behavior as a function of the environment. Of course, then, other individuals in the population represented by these other lines may be higher or lower in that behavior. This just shows the consistent individual differences of that behavior. And likewise, some individuals may be more responsive than others. What I want to look into right now is not just looking at a single environmental variable, but assessing multiple environmental variables, in fact, different combinations of those. So what I've done in an experiment here is trapped a number of squirrels, 27, brought them back to some animal quarters we have nearby the field site where we can house them for a little while and do some more manipulative tests. And I trapped only males for obvious logistical reasons, since testing a female on her special day would make it tough. But what I've done is to manipulate each of these variables in a 2x2 factorial fashion. So each individual experiences each combination of these environments. And so we have multiple measurements of anti-predator behavior in these different environments to test whether there's some particular effect of the combination of environmental variables on that behavior, such that a response to one environmental variable might depend on the level of another environmental variable. So the way we measure anti-predator behavior back in the lab, have this open field arena, and I'm not sure if it shows up really well here. We have an additional aspect here, which is an artificial burrow apparatus. Put that down in the center, and there's a PVC pipe burrow system, which, as I get this started up, you'll see a squirrel poke its head out of the burrow system. And so a pretty simple dependent variable of their anti-predator behavior, the proportion of time they're spending in that safe place versus outside where it's riskier. You just saw that squirrel go back in. It's going to come back out, and in just a moment, going to put it in a high-risk predation situation, throw a frisbee across. They freak out like it's a hawk, one of their predators. And one other thing I want to point out up here is this little tube there. Put an odor cube in there, which we can load with odors, well, test it with a blank cube, which they don't seem to respond to. Also load it with peanut butter, their very favorite food, as well as odors of estrus females. So that was another reason to focus in on males for this experiment, is that we had a reliable way to manipulate that context through odors. And so, looking here, as I mentioned, not just at behavioral variation along a single gradient, but rather multiple environmental variables, and in particular, asking whether there's an interactive effect. Does the combination matter? And so first, I'm going to show these are the results comparing squirrels' behavior in the high predation risk and the low predation risk environmental manipulations. And we see a couple things. There's a significant main effect, although what's much more striking is that there are substantial individual differences in those in individuals' behavior. So we see the difference in the height of that reaction norm, so to speak. Assess this through some linear mixed models. Also see here, just by taking a look at things, that there's a lot of variation in the slope, essentially their response to that environmental change. I'll come back to that in just another minute, but I want to point that out now. Looking at the other environmental variable just by itself, comparing how they their anti-predator behavior, their refuge use in a foraging context versus a mating context, you see that they also, there's a significant fixed effect, but once again, very substantial between individual differences showing personality in this trait. Now, when we look at multidimensional plasticity, so to evaluate both of these environmental variables and their effect on behavior together, we see that there's a fairly strong interactive effect, that individuals spend the least time in the burrow, the lowest level of anti-predator behavior in the low-risk mating situation, which we thought one explanation for that, which we proposed, is that it might reflect trade-offs that the squirrels are dealing with. both mating and foraging occurs outside the burrow, and so they have a trade-off between mating and predation risk, as well as foraging and predation risk. And we make the argument that as an iteroparous species, since they're mating over multiple days, over multiple years, they might discriminate between that difference in an evolutionary payoff between a potential mate and a potential meal. But in high predation risk situations, they're less likely to discriminate between those. Another thing we were able to assess is whether individuals' responses to a given environmental variable were consistent not just over time, but were they consistent when measured at different levels of another environmental variable. So on this graph here, have this labeled as plasticity in the low-risk environment. What that actually is the difference between an individual's anti-predator behavior in the low-risk foraging situation and the low-risk mating situation. And so we get that measure of plasticity at a low predation risk level, and we see that it correlates fairly strongly with that same plasticity in the high-risk environment, showing that their consistent individual differences in plasticity across environments. And when we flip this around the other way, we see a similar pattern as well. So in evaluating multidimensional plasticity and personality, I have a few conclusions from this. We see that squirrels show plasticity to relevant environmental variables. And interestingly, the response to one environmental variable depends on the level of another environmental variable. And so I think this has some ramifications on other studies, and this is something that I'll get back to in addressing intra-individual variability, that what we're not measuring is certainly impacting things, which certainly is no surprising conclusion, but I think what's interesting to show here is that the pattern of behavioral change in response to multiple variables can actually show potential adaptive behaviors if we think of what the natural history of squirrels is in terms of trade-offs between foraging and mating, foraging and predation risk. And then we also see that there are consistent differences in anti-predator behavior and consistent individual differences in plasticity of anti-predator behavior in different environments. And I want to break this down in two ways that we can kind of categorize this into within individual variation and between individual variation. So this has been studied for a while, looking at plasticity and personality, that we have variation at these two levels. Individuals might be changing, and that's one aspect of variation. But those individuals show consistent individual differences, another aspect of behavioral variation. So that's been evaluated in the context of plasticity before. What people are starting to look at now as well is how correlations among behaviors, behavioral syndromes, might actually vary at these two different levels. And so for the next section, I'm going to dig into that just a little bit and try to evaluate the relationships between the behaviors at within and between individual levels, as well as their relationships with condition at between individual and within the individual levels, with the idea that that can help give some insight to some of the hypotheses out there of how condition might affect behavioral syndrome. So behavioral syndromes, in a lot of species, it's been found that something like aggression is often positively related to boldness. This is the case for a number of different behaviors, but this could be due to two different relationships. Could have a situation where we have four, our hypothetical population of four here that we're testing. On the first test and the second test, that individual number four with the high boldness and the high aggression may be consistent in that behavior, such that that consistency is partially responsible for the correlation alternatively, could have a situation where on the next test, that high boldness, high aggression individual is now the low boldness, low aggression individual. This has actually been documented a number of times. I think it was one of Allison Bell's earlier papers that noted in Stickleback, there was a relationship between aggression and boldness, but not necessarily consistency between individuals in the average level of those traits. And so recently people have applied some statistical models to try to partition between individual and within individual correlations, such that in this scenario one, where individuals have a particular behavior that's consistent over time, it's a between individual correlation, whereas in that scenario two, where individuals themselves are changing, but that relationship between the behaviors is still there, that comprises a within individual correlation. And so this has some implications on whether this correlation, whether traits can evolve. What I want to address now is the idea that different models proposing that condition affects behavior might have different predictions at the within individual and between individual level. So a number of models have proposed that differences in state, some aspect of an individual may be responsible for animal personality, for consistent individual differences. And one of the primary state variables that people will look at is condition. And for Belding's ground squirrels, this is an important aspect as a hibernating species, that we might imagine condition would be important to their behavior. And in looking at the impact of condition on behavior, there are two kind of primary classes of hypotheses, asset protection and state-dependent safety. The idea behind asset protection, we can look at two different squirrels here, a nice big fat squirrel in good condition and a skinny squirrel in low condition. And because that squirrel on the top has a lot of nutritional reserves, it's hypothesized that they would behave shyly to protect that asset, whereas the individual in low condition wouldn't have an asset to protect and so would not behave as shyly, and if it's avoiding starvation would behave boldly to try to obtain an asset. What this then does is that individual who's initially in high condition, because it's behaving shyly and is less likely to obtain resources, is then in lower condition, whereas that individual in low condition, if it survives, is then in higher condition, such that then that individual who initially behaved shyly now behaves boldly to obtain that asset, and vice versa, so that we might expect a negative correlation between boldness and condition. Now, state-dependent safety proposes that individuals in good condition can better handle risk, whether that's evading a predator or something along those lines, predicting that the individuals in high condition are going to behave more boldly because they can deal with that risk, whereas the low condition individual behave more shyly. And so that individual in high condition ends up in higher condition, the really fat squirrel there, and that other individual in low condition ends up in lower condition. And as this feeds back, you then might expect a positive relationship between boldness and condition. And so thinking of this in terms of between individual and within individual correlations, we have an idea of what direction we might see for a relationship. But we also see that there are predictions that asset protection, if these dynamics are at play in the system, would predict a negative within individual correlation, because those individuals are changing back and forth as their condition goes up and down, whereas state-dependent safety would predict positive between individual correlations between risky behavior and condition. That's not to say there may not be within individual correlations if state-dependent safety is at play, but we have these primary predictions at these different levels we can evaluate to see whether the asset protection hypothesis for state-dependent safety seems to be affecting behaviors here. So in squirrels, I'll be looking at a few different behavioral traits here, focusing in on activity, exploration, and response to restraint behavior. So for activity behavior, measure that in an open field arena and see the squirrel kind of ambulating about, crossing these lines, which you may doesn't show up the best. Our dependent variable for how active a given squirrel is on an occasion is just a simple count of the number of lines it crosses in 5 minutes. This explained most all the variation in activity, so we did that simple measure rather than PCA or something like that. In this test, we can also evaluate exploration, have a few false burrows for the squirrel to explore. And this is a species-relevant thing for them since, you know, as they're going out their natural environment, they'll check out different areas. So get a measure of exploration by counting the number of head dips into those burrows. And last, measure response to restraint behavior. This has been interpreted as docility before. And as you can see, put a squirrel into a small confined bag, raise that up, and measure the amount of time over a minute that the squirrel is struggling against that restraint. It's actually similar to some tests in lab rats that has been interpreted as a measure of depression before, but in this scenario, interpreted as docility. And for condition, measure body condition index, looking at mass length residuals. So, you know, a squirrel that's bigger for a given size, we'll say, is in better condition. And this is actually experimentally validated that, you know, if you feed squirrels low nutrition food, they'll have a lower body condition index as measured by mass length residuals. So to look at personality in free-ranging squirrels, these squirrels were part of a long-studied population up in Rock Creek where that initial photo was taken, if you remember. You can look that there is significant repeatability in these traits, particularly activity and response to restraint, but the condition is low repeatability. Now, if we look at the correlations and look at the between individual correlations, we see that for the behaviors, there are significant correlations between activity, exploration, this RR is response to restraint. The dashed lines indicate a negative correlation, whereas the solid line indicates a positive correlation. And so we see that the behavioral syndrome is at the between individual level here. However, there's not a significant relationship between those behaviors and condition at the between individual level. But when we look at within individual correlations, we see that there's not substantial, but a significant negative correlation between condition, activity, condition, and exploration. And so that actually aligns with the asset protection dynamics that predict a negative within individual correlation between risky behavior and condition. So we have support for the asset protection dynamics, but that doesn't necessarily support that asset protection explains the behavioral syndrome, which would require larger individual differences in condition. And so another thing that I'm looking into is whether this affects selection on that suite of traits, since it seems to be that condition is important in individuals' behavioral decisions, that may be selective dynamics that are then producing this behavioral syndrome. All right, so next I want to move on and talk about intra-individual variability and unmeasured environmental factors. So intra-individual variability is defined as the amount of variation around an individual's behavioral mean. A good example for this that I think exemplifies the concept are horseshoe crabs. And to see the differences in intra-individual variability, we can look at these two individuals where you look at the average level of their, this is latency to reemerge after they're turned over, a measure of boldness in this species. See that that individual on the left behaves very near that mean value over all those observations, over all those measurements. They've taken 10 measurements on these individuals. Whereas the individual on the right fluctuates widely. So it's been found that there are significant individual differences in this aspect of behavioral variation, that it's consistent over time. And interestingly, it seems to be a functional response. So you might ask yourself, all right, this one fluctuates more widely, but does that really matter? It's proposed in hermit crabs that this might be an anti-predator strategy, that sort of lower level of predictability that individual with wider variation has may be beneficial when predators are around. And in fact, a follow-up study found that to be the case, that when horseshoe crabs were tested in the presence of a predation cue, they found individuals to be more variable in that behavior, suggesting that not only is this a consistent aspect of an individual's behavioral phenotype, but also showing that it can have a functional outcome, a functional benefit. So what I actually want to look into right here is intra-colony variability. So looking at, rather than something like anti-predator behavior here in harvester ants, looking at nest maintenance, so a behavior at the colony level that has been shown to have personality, consistent individual differences, has been shown previously to correlate with a number of other behaviors, including foraging. Try to assess whether there are individual differences in the variability of that behavior. All right. So the species that I'll be showing some data on here are Messer andrae, and these are seed-eating ants. And you see them right now struggling with a toothpick the nest maintenance workers are doing. And that's a quick look at the assay to measure nest maintenance. So this is a little schematic of the nest entrance, the nest mound. What we'll do is place 6 toothpicks over the entrance. The nest maintenance workers will move those toothpicks, and we'll measure the distance moved in 20 minutes. Perform that test on multiple days, taking the average distance moved each day as a measure of that colony's nest maintenance behavior for the day. So again, the question arises, why would variability matter? You know, they need to clean up a little bit, but does it really make a difference as to whether they're variable in doing that or not? There's evidence from another harvester ant species, Pogonomyrmex barbatus, that midden hydrocarbons occur in a gradient. So the nest here is considered the midden, the nest mound. Hydrocarbons are have colony-specific odors that help returning foraging ants realize that they're back home. And you see these concentric circles here showing that the colony hydrocarbons occur in a gradient. And altering that gradient disrupts foraging, suggesting that variability in nest maintenance impacts foraging success. Now, Messer andrae have a similar foraging ecology, suggesting that this might be important to their biology as well. And so looking at intra-colony variability, I'll ask a couple questions here. Do Messer andrae colonies have significant differences in intra-colony variability of nest maintenance behavior? So for social insects, is this an actual characteristic of colony behavior? But then also, trying to address to what extent is intracolony variability due to unmeasured environmental factors. So in other systems, like squirrels or hermit crabs, you may be able to control for a number of environmental factors, such as predation risk, such as temperature, but there are a number of unmeasured factors that are going to be important. Multidimensional plasticity here, essentially. What the social insect system allows us to evaluate is to what extent is that intracolony variability that we assess due to unmeasured environmental factors. And I'll get into that in a little bit more detail in just a moment, but first I want to show the results about whether there is intracolony variability in nest maintenance behavior, and have just two individual colonies shown here. And we can see, not quite to the extent that we see in those hermit crabs, but one individual here that fluctuates much less around its behavioral mean compared to another individual colony, that fluctuates much more widely around that behavioral mean. Okay, so to address this next question, to what extent is intra-individual variability or intra-colony variability due to unmeasured environmental factors? Try to think through things in this way, where if we look at this variability of nest maintenance behavior over a number of observations and see an individual that's fluctuating, it's been noted in some of the studies of intra-individual variability that one is not able to discriminate whether there's some unmeasured environmental variable that may be fluctuating in a similar way that would suggest that this intra-individual variability is actually just unmeasured plasticity. And that's important in understanding whether this variability, the amount of fluctuations, is an intrinsic property of an individual or if it's an extrinsic property of an individual. And so to try to pull that apart a little bit with this behavioral assay and the system of harvester ants, where we're looking at colony level behaviors, but there are many individuals engaging in those behaviors, can address this question and actually apply some data to try to distinguish between unmeasured environmental variation and intra-individual variability, intra-colony variability in this case. We can do that with the data collection setup. We have a within measure, within observation, a within day measure of intracolony variability. So if you remember how we measured intracolony variability, we did that on multiple days, taking the average distance moved, as distance moved as the nest maintenance behavior. And so you could see an individual with the same mean may be more or less variable on a given day. So we know that individuals differ across days, but within a day, we actually have a number of measurements of nest maintenance behavior that may be more variable or less variable. So with the assumption that unmeasured environmental variation between days is greater than within, we can ask the question whether behavioral variation is greater between observations, between days, than within days, with the prediction that if unmeasured environmental variables are driving this intracolony variability, if that's driving the intracolony variability, we would see much more between day variation than within day. And we measure that with an ANCOVA obtaining the within and between observation mean square error for each colony, and then testing whether those are different. And we see that there's substantially more between day variation than within day variation, suggesting that even though Messier André colonies have significant differences in intracolony variability of nest maintenance, that intracolony variability is largely due to unmeasured environmental variables, suggesting that These other factors are very important in assessing this aspect of behavioral variation, and actually, to some extent, are a cause of it. Okay. So next, I want to talk a little bit about temporal predictability and stress physiology. This is actually getting back to squirrels. But to exemplify temporal predictability, we can think of intra-individual variability as a measure of predictability. That individual on the left is much more likely to behave near its mean level than that individual on the right. However, we could have two individuals, these are just hypothetical data here, that may have an identical behavioral mean, as well as identical intra-individual variability, yet differ in the pattern of their behavior, such that an individual's behavior in one moment is predictive of its behavior in the next, that there is temporal predictability. So we define that as when an individual's behavior at a given moment indicates how it'll behave next. And so when looking at two individuals that may have this pattern of behaviors over a sequence of observations, we can assess that using some autoregressive models, where this autoregressive parameter will show the relationship, whether there's a positive relationship between behavior in a given moment and a behavior in the next moment. So this is similar to carryover effects that are seen in, say, development, but applying that to moment-to-moment variation such that, you know, as an ant colony is varying its nest maintenance behavior from day to day, or a squirrel is varying its activity from moment to moment, that this may be a consistent aspect of behavioral variation, part of its behavioral phenotype. So again, I'll look at this in squirrels, where we have individuals that differ in their mean value of activity. There are consistent individual differences, as I showed before. I actually find that they're impacted by stress hormones, glucocorticoids. And so I'll actually take a different measure of activity, and still counting the number of lines crossed, this time over a 4-minute test, bin this into 10-second intervals so we can see how variable and how temporally predictable that individual is over time. Now again, why might this be important? Similar to intra-individual variability in the horseshoe, in the hermit crabs, it may be an anti-predator strategy that when individuals are under predation risk, they would behave less predictably over time. That it could have a functional impact that way. And so also take a fecal sample to look at glucocorticoid levels. And we know in this species, in ground squirrels, stress hormones are released when under predation threat. So we might expect that those squirrels with high glucocorticoids might have low temporal predictability. That would be the prediction under this expectation that it matters for anti-predator behavior. So we'll get data from each individual test like this, showing that some individuals might bounce around quite a bit in their activity over the course of that test, whereas other individuals might be more predictable, more consistent over time. So our experimental design here is to bring squirrels back into captivity. It's an activity pretest. Give some of the individuals glucocorticoid treatment before a post-test. And so we have these two measures of temporal predictability for each individual. So we can look at whether there are consistent individual differences in temporal predictability, as well as whether there's an effect of cortisol levels. And we find that looking at that autoregressive parameter, that measure of temporal predictability in the first test compared to the second test, there are consistent individual differences, that those are positively correlated with one another, showing that this seems to be another aspect of behavioral variation in this species that may have some functional impacts. And looking at how it varies with cortisol levels suggests that that may be the case, that there's a negative relationship between cortisol levels and temporal predictability, as one might expect if it's the case that temporal predictability impacts impacts predation risk. So some of the follow-up studies might try to manipulate predation risk itself, see if both cortisol levels and temporal predictability are varying in response to that manipulation. So we see here that ground squirrels have consistent individual differences in temporal predictability of activity. Also that squirrels with high cortisol also have low temporal predictability. I have to say there are some caveats to this in terms of a lot of the behaviors, the behavioral measure that can't go below zero, which might induce some temporal predictability in individuals with a low average behavior, as well as some other statistical issues that trying to deal with, and one reason that I'm now studying ants is to be able to study behavior over time in a species that is not don't have to worry about trapping it every day, don't have to worry about habituation over multiple behavioral measures, with the idea that we'll be able to get a better idea. That we'll be able to get a better idea of temporal predictability and how environmental fluctuation over time may affect behavioral fluctuations over time. Thinking forward to when we might be able to look not just at plasticity in terms of what's going on in a particular moment, as I did in the multidimensional plasticity of ground squirrels, but rather to also look at what may have happened on the day before or the week before to see what lingering effects, that there may be some temporal plasticity that's explaining some of the behavioral variation, potentially between individual variation and personality in these species. All right. So as far as conclusions, looked at multi-dimensional plasticity and personality in ground squirrels and found significant interactive effects, showing that the combination of environmental variables really seemed to matter, but also that those responses showed consistent individual differences. For behavioral syndromes, we see the condition is important, but that the dynamics appear to be asset protection dynamics, which by themselves would not explain behavioral syndromes, suggesting that there might be something else going on in the system, such as some selective dynamic that might be explaining those consistent individual differences. But as we might expect for a hibernating species, condition is very important to this suite of behavioral traits. In harvester ants, we see that intra-individual variability is substantial and significant, but have some indication that unmeasured environmental factors are driving that aspect of behavioral variation, suggesting that for other studies of intra-individual variability, this factor of extrinsic variation needs to be better controlled. And finally, that temporal predictability is an aspect of animal personality, an aspect of an individual's behavioral phenotype, and that it seems to vary with stress physiology. Some of the broader conclusions are that the complexity of behavioral variation calls for more detailed analysis, which the field has been moving towards, and I think some of these results show that can help inform us about some of the causes of behavioral variation, not just in terms of evaluating something like condition or evaluating something like environmental variation or stress physiology, but also that one aspect of behavioral variation may account for behavioral variation at another level, And that's another active area of research that I think this contributes to, that there may be relationships between plasticity and personality and intra-individual variability. And so some of my future directions will be digging into that a little bit more to ask, as I mentioned, how temporal variation and environmental variables might affect behavioral variation. This idea that it might not be a response just to what the environment is at that time, but rather the day before, 2 days before, a week before, and to try to get a handle on statistically assessing that variation, which may account for some of the between individual differences that we see in both squirrels and ants. And then also another direction that didn't have that I'm starting to work on now is looking at whether associated microorganisms affect behavior to produce personality. So in ants, trying to manipulate the bacteria, the internal and external microbiome of individuals to see if that impacts colony behavior, and in particular, investigating foraging behavior as well as nest mate recognition. So a few future directions that I'd be interested to talk to anyone about. And have some acknowledgments, certainly a lot of people that helped out in this research. And now I think I have a few minutes for questions here. And certainly encourage you to email me if you want to follow up on any of these issues. That's been something that was kind of logistically easy. We've also done some validations that the fecal cortisol is strongly correlated with circulating blood cortisol levels. And so that certainly would be better, but from a logistical standpoint, that was easier to deal with and representative of that variation that we were looking for. In terms of the second question about the dynamic of the condition and that not being as repeatable as we might expect it to be. I think what might be going on there is, as I talk about liking to switch to ants because I don't have to worry about trapping squirrels, our sampling was really just opportunistic there, and as squirrels are going through the active season, condition is really changing quite a bit. So I think maybe it's a situation where because of that sampling, we weren't able to detect differences that might be there. And one reason why I suggest that there might be differences that weren't captured there, if I do a correlation between, say, the first capture of an individual in 1 year to the next year, the repeatability is a higher level. Granted, the sample size is much lower. Is not as clear as one might hope, but those are a couple explanations as to why that might be the case.
It's just following up on that. It seemed like the way you presented the asset protection idea would not expect a maintenance of strong between individual correlations and differences, right? You presented
for
that.
Condition?
You were talking about it more for sort of behaviors across
sure.
different behaviors,
mm-hmm.
but I think even for almost anything, everything is changing,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't clear that your results actually fit either of those existing models that well. And it might even be that that the different models are talking about different kinds of sort of condition versus reproductive value, you know, different state variables.
Yeah, suggesting that the condition might not be. What's driving that asset protection?
Yeah,
is that what you're suggesting?
or something is driving these maintenance of between individual differences that that allow for between individual correlations.
Mm-hmm.
That was across behaviors, right?
Yes, across behaviors. But then condition, there were not between individual correlations between any of the behaviors in condition, suggesting that it's not the state-dependent safety. That negative within the individual correlation suggested that it might be asset protection dynamics, but not in such a way that would explain the personality, not explain the between individual differences.
I was curious if you knew anything about, so first I have a clarifying question.
Sure.
When you were measuring all of the ants moving the toothpicks, those were different ants moving the six different, it wasn't just one individual moving all of the six. Did you keep track of individuals, so do you know anything about the intra-individual variation of a particular ant and how that relates to intra-colony variation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question and an interesting question that I don't have data on for that species and that behavior. But one thing that my lab is looking into with another species of harvester ant is how interactions among individuals and potentially intra-individual variability there might affect intra-colony variability. So as I've made the switch from squirrels to social insects, it's been very interesting, and one of the most fascinating parts is that balance between looking at the colony as an individual unit as well as having individual ants. And so I think that would be really interesting to follow up on, you know, individually marked ants to see how their behaviors and intra-individual variability may be giving rise to those colony behaviors.
Right. Or I thought also maybe colonies differ in how much turnover there is in that particular role. Like, is it that day in, day out, the same ants are taking care of these toothpicks or not?
So that tends not to be the case, actually, that even with turnover, in some previous studies where we have looked at marked ants and what tasks they're engaging in, there's quite a bit of turnover that even day to day, the same individuals aren't engaging in those same tasks.
And do colonies differ in that?
That's a good question. I don't think we know. But in terms of looking at marked individuals and some you know individuals engaging in the same behavior, even if we in another harvester ant species, if we look from year to year where we know none of the workers are alive, the colony is still exhibit consistent colony differences in say foraging behavior, suggesting that it's an aspect of the colony and not the individuals comprising it.
So you emphasize this notion that temporal predictability is, it's a good idea to be temporally unpredictable relative to predators,
mm-hmm.
so they can't sort of figure out what you're going to do next. But on the other hand, there's the notion that temporal predictability is a good idea for social interactions, at least sometimes, that you know, if you want to have friends and mates and stuff like that, you need to have some predictability. And I guess it could be cool for your system to also even look at their temporal, you know, sort of repeatability, predictability for some sort of socially driven assay, their response to, you know, actually female cues or something like that, and see if the same individuals that are unpredictable are in one context are unpredictable in the other, even though maybe you should flip-flop on what's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really nice point to think you might have a prediction of unpredictable behavior in an anti-predator context, but predictable behavior in, say, a mating context to see if there is plasticity in that aspect. Yeah, that would be very interesting.
Or why do you think so many of them were actually quite predictable? In fact, you're putting them in an assay where they might actually think, well, I'm out in the open here, this is kind of dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and they should have been more unpredictable, and you kind of emphasize that some of them were unpredictable, and that's kind of smart.
Right,
yeah.
And that it seemed to be the ones with
high
higher quart that had that lower level of predictability. Yeah, so the explanation as to why some individuals were more predictable, that might actually feed into one of the caveats in terms of if individuals were just less active overall, then they might be more likely to be predictable through this measure, which might suggest that there's some relationship between the predictability of behavior and the mean level of the behavior. So I think that's one potential explanation, as well as just physiological processes that are producing those behaviors that might be more even keel in some individuals, so to speak.
Okay.